So I thought I would just start out by mentioning something that I found very interesting today. I have a subscription to the New York Times. I've mentioned articles in it before. And one of the things that the New York Times does is they keep an ongoing, constantly updated list of the most emailed articles. And yesterday I noticed in the evening an article on Buddhism. It was actually part of a series called The Stone. I think it means like the Philosopher's Stone. And they had a series of several articles on various religions. And this one was on Buddhism. And when I looked today at the paper online, it was the most emailed article in the New York Times. So this is a worldwide publication. There are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of articles of all sorts of import and variation. And this happened to be the single most emailed article. It really amazed me. It suggests that there is a deep interest in Buddhism, at least among the readers of the New York Times. And I'm sure that they have millions of readers. I found it very fascinating. I read the article, actually, and I thought it was fairly basic and somewhat philosophical, as this series often is, although intellectually stimulating. And the writer knew a lot about Buddhism. I believe he was a professor of comparative religions, or perhaps his specialty was the Buddhist religion. And he brought up various sort of core aspects of Buddhism. First of all, that it is atheistic, meaning it doesn't hold out an idea or concept of a being outside that created the universe and is pulling strings. And yet, it's concerned very much about awakening, about this experience of Buddha nature. And he went into these sort of core treatises in Buddhism, or core statements of the Buddha. One of them, and the first one he mentioned, was the Four Noble Truths, which you all know quite well. Another one was the Three Marks of Existence, which I've mentioned in many, many of these Teisho, that everything that takes on form, or what you would call existence, and I'm putting air quotes around that, is of the nature of suffering, dukkha, is impermanent, and has no self-nature, no independent self-nature. And he went into several other aspects of classic Buddhist teaching. And also there were questions about rebirth, reincarnation, things like that. So I only bring that up mainly because it struck me how incredibly interested modern-day intelligent people who read the New York Times are in Buddhism. I found it very, very surprising. You often, because you know the groups here are small, you feel like it's a somewhat of a niche religion, but it is of deep import to people. People want to understand what is the truth without adopting any beliefs, any concepts about it. I want to get to the real thing. So I thought tonight I would actually read to you a very brief treatise that is probably the single most important, most chanted, most read, most held close to the heart statement about the core of Buddhism in at least Zen, and perhaps in many other branches of Buddhism, but definitely in Zen. Now, we've talked about other treatises that were very important to Zen, one of them being the Diamond Sutra, which I've mentioned in many different Teisho. I've never gone into this particular one, though, and it is such a core treatise. It's called the Heart Sutra, otherwise known as the Prajnaparamita Hridaya, which the translation from Sanskrit is, and it doesn't have the word sutra in it, and it's not classically a sutra, meaning it is not a transcription of the words of the Buddha when he was alive. So this Prajnaparamita Hridaya means the heart of perfect wisdom. Prajnaparamita. Paramita would be the perfection. Prajna is wisdom, meaning this wisdom of awakening of truth with a capital T, of your true nature, Buddha nature. So the perfection of that, this is the heart of it. Hridaya is heart. So the Prajnaparamita Hridaya. Now, the date when this was written is unknown. Historians are certain that it was not written at around the time of the Buddha's life, which was 500 BC. So it can't be the exact words of the Buddha, although his teachings reverberate throughout time, right to this present moment. So they think it was dated somewhere between 100 before the Common Era to 600 of the Common Era, somewhere in that range. We don't really know for sure. We know that the oldest copy in existence ever found on Earth was found in a Japanese temple, a very old Japanese temple. I presume it was a Zen temple. And it was written on a palm leaf. And they dated it, it actually has on it the date of 609, the year 609. So this was actually about 30 years before the birth in China of Wei Nung, who was the sixth Zen patriarch, who very famously made the statement, which I feel is such a core teaching in Buddhism. He said, from the very beginning, not a single thing has ever existed. So this was produced on this palm leaf about 30 years before Wei Nung, and right at the beginning, maybe just a little bit before the what was called the Golden Age of Zen, which is the Tang Dynasty, which started around the end of the 600s and went close to the 800s, so mostly through the 700s. Was this Golden Age of Zen, the Tang Dynasty, in China. Now it's believed that this was written in China, but it spread throughout the Orient and now has spread to the West as well. And if we were still chanting, which we haven't done in a long time, we would chant this particular sutra. Now Richard Clark, our teacher who has now passed last year, had a beautiful translation of this, which was a kind of a chant. I actually copied off the internet a little different translation that is not as chantable, but I didn't have a copy of the translation of Richard's right at hand, so I copied this just to read it. So I'm just going to read it, and then we'll look into it deeply. So this is the Heart Sutra, and this particular translation goes as follows. Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, that's the Bodhisattva of Compassion, okay, or Kanon, as this Bodhisattva is known in Japan. So, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, when deeply practicing Prajnaparamita, clearly saw that the five skandhas are all empty and was saved from all suffering and distress. Shariputra, form, is no different to emptiness. Emptiness no different to form. That which is form is emptiness. That which is emptiness, form. Sensations, perceptions, impressions, and consciousness are also like this. Shariputra, all things and phenomena are marked by emptiness. They are neither appearing nor disappearing. Change the page here. Neither impure nor pure, neither increasing nor decreasing. Therefore, in emptiness, no forms, no sensations, perceptions, impressions, or consciousness, no eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, no sights, sounds, odors, tastes, objects of touch, objects of mind, no realm of sight up to no realm of consciousness, no ignorance and no end of ignorance, up to no aging and death, and no end of aging and death, no suffering, accumulation, cessation, or path, no wisdom and no attainment. With nothing to attain, bodhisattvas rely on Prajnaparamita, and their minds are without hindrance. They are without hindrance and thus without fear. Far apart from all confused dreams, they dwell in nirvana. All Buddhas of the past, present, and future rely on prajnaparamita and attain Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. Therefore know that prajnaparamita is the great transcendent mantra, the great bright mantra, the supreme mantra, the unequal balanced mantra that can eliminate all suffering and is real, not false. So proclaim the prajnaparamita mantra. Proclaim the mantra that says, and this is a very famous mantra in Buddhism, gate gate paragate parasamgate bodhisvaha. And I'll translate it from the Sanskrit. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone fully beyond, awake, rejoice. So this is the Heart Sutra. Just to define a couple of words in here, skandhas. The skandhas, this is another basic teaching in Buddhism that although there appears to be a being, an entity, that I am, if I am seen clearly, I see that there is no entity. There are only these five heaps called the skandhas. So these skandhas are defined in here as no forms, sensations, perceptions, impressions, or consciousness. So these are the heaps. These are the elements of experience. You could call them the elementary parts of what ends up in a concatenation that appears to be a separated entity that has its own volition, will, mind, separate from all others and separate from all things, something that I've given the name I to. But when I see clearly from the depths of prajna wisdom, I see that there is form, sensation, perception, impression meaning my interpretation and the meaning and how it links up with all my thinking, and consciousness. And all those things together create the concatenation that has my name, my history, my beliefs, my attachments, my sense of being an I. So this Heart Sutra is going into the very essence of reality, the very essence. And the critical thing to grasp here are these two lines. And these two lines, essentially, they are the most clear statement you could make of what awakening is, what Buddha nature is, what your true nature is. And these lines are, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. I actually wrote a book last year and published it, and the title of it is Form is Emptiness. So form is emptiness, emptiness is form. And then, so this emptiness, the sutra goes on to define what this means, but if you look at it closely, it doesn't tell you what it is, it tells you what it isn't. It speaks in negatives. It can't be exactly put into words. It can't be exactly described, because even this concept itself is emptiness. In other words, it does not have any actual existence, any actual reality. It's only a construct. It's a finger pointing at something. What this thing is pointing at in this sutra is described as having no form, no sensation, no perception, no impressions, no consciousness, no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no sight, sound, odors, taste, objects of touch, objects of mind, no realm of sight up to no realm of consciousness. All these levels that in Buddhist teachings, in the Abhidharma, they go through all these different levels, all the realms, the actual experience, the perception of the experience, the sensory organ that's involved with the experience, the general class of that particular sense, on up. Very, very detailed. So essentially, this emptiness has no ignorance, no end of ignorance, no aging, no death, no end of aging and death, no suffering, no accumulation, no wisdom, no attainment. All these things are concepts. They are pictures held in the mind. They appear to have reality. They appear to be out there, outside me. In other words, they appear to stand outside me. They appear to exist. But remember what the six patriarchs said. From the very beginning, not a single thing has ever stood outside me. Outside me. These are my constructs. These are my projections. These are the names that I give to something that has no form, no color, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch. This is very, very difficult, impossible for the intellectual mind to completely grasp. How do we get there? We get there through the practice that we're doing, through this deep introspection, constantly turning the light of the mind back in on itself. So this sutra is the very core of what we're doing. It's the very core. It's the practice of form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Now how could I begin to understand this? Form is emptiness, form is emptiness. So form, what is form first of all? Form is anything that appears, anything that can possibly be the object of a subject, both with air quotes, anything that could be the object of a subject, including things that are seen, things that are smelled, things that are touched, things that are thought about, things that are felt, things that are emoted, memories, reactions, habit patterns, reflexes, pain, suffering, all these things are form. What does that mean, form? Form. Something that is continually changing, something that is interdependent, something that is part of a fabric of space-time, something that is completely bound to causation, that had a reason to appear exactly as it is right now. It could not have been different than it is right now. As a matter of fact, as I've described in several of these talks, it's very useful to consider form to be done. Anything that can be your object, anything that can appear in your awareness, anything that you can sense, feel, smell, think about, remember, react to, emote about, is done. At the time you are aware of it, all the karmic causes and conditions were already set up and acted and created this result, which you are not aware of instantaneously. There is a very slight delay. Now, if the sun went out, as I've described before, that delay would be 8 minutes and 20 seconds from the time the sun went out till we saw that on Earth. And we would realize at that point that that was done. I may not want the sun to be going out. I may realize that I'm going to die. Everything went completely dark. But there's no changing it. It happened 8 minutes and 20 seconds before. What does that mean about the sun going out? It means the sun going out is absolute, absolute. It could not have been any other way. Therefore, it can't be compared to any other possible condition. It was the only way it could be right now because it's already done. Everything that we experience is exactly like that. Perhaps it's a shorter amount of time. Perhaps it's a nanosecond, a fraction of a nanosecond, but it's done. The karmic causes and conditions were complete. And then it appeared in my consciousness. So that is the beginning of wisdom, because we can begin to, in our practice, not in the virtual world, the virtual human world where we need to get things done and do X, Y, and Z to survive and live within a realm of planning and maps and thinking, but in our world of practice here. This is the Prajnaparamita world. This is the so-called real world, the actual world. In the actual world, every single thing that takes form is, in a sense, irrelevant. Irrelevant. It's done. It's irrelevant to anything that I need to do about it, any action I need to take about it, before I penetrate to its emptiness side. It's done. I can put it down completely, meaning I can put down my struggle with it, my fighting against it, my adapting to it, my trying to change it into something else, which is preventing me from flipping it over, seeing its substance. So in this sutra it says form is emptiness. The substance of these forms, not their appearance, their substance is emptiness. Emptiness. What is this emptiness? What is it? Think about it this way. The six patriarchs said from the very beginning not a single thing has ever stood outside you. What experience would you have that doesn't stand outside you? How about a dream? You wake up in the morning, you remember a dream you had. Now in the dream, it felt outside you. That's the nature of a dream. If you were aware that it was a dream, you would no longer be in the actual sense dreaming. You would have woken up in the dream and realized, oh, this is just a dream, it's irrelevant. Nothing I need to do about it. It's not apart from me. It is of the substance of my mind. It's not out there. It doesn't, quote, exist, stand outside. When we wake up after being in some tormented place, which dreams very often are, dreams are very often uncomfortable, painful, suffering, just like real life. They're the way the mind and the emotions work out conflicts and difficulties and struggles. Sometimes they're pleasant, but most dreams aren't that pleasant. When we wake up, all of a sudden, we don't need to contend with it. Matter of fact, it becomes so irrelevant that within 5, 10, 15 minutes, the dream is forgotten. We can't even remember what the dream was. It doesn't stay in our mind because we realize that it never was apart from the mind, not even for a moment. Not one iota of the dream was outside the mind of the dreamer. Now we're beginning to understand something about this emptiness. The dream happens. There are sights, sounds, smells, feelings, emotions, decisions, consciousness. All sorts of events that occur. But not a single one of them exists. Not a single one stands outside the mind. Every single one of these things that feels so outside in the dream is actually nothing other than the nature of mind itself. It is mind itself. When you have awakening in Buddhism, you realize that that is true of everything, not just your dreams, but everything. Nothing stands outside mind. Everything is of the nature of mind. Now, what is this? What is it? As long as we're struggling with the form side, the particular configuration that mind is taking in this moment, we cannot see through to its essence, to its emptiness. We're caught on the form side. So we're caught in suffering, death, aging, struggle, all these things. But the Heart Sutra said there is no pain, no cause of pain, no cease in pain, no attainment, no awakening. All of these things, again, are forms. When I say aging, that's a form. But this form is not outside. It doesn't exist apart from my knowing. So I need to now understand that that is the case and find out what that substance is. This is exactly what this zazen is. This penetrating zazen is going to the essence of the substance of our experience, not floating on the surface, struggling with it, trying to make it better, trying to change it, trying to analyze it, making some meaning about it, something about me. It means something about me as a person, either good or bad. We have to begin to get underneath this level in order to look in this direction. So the Heart Sutra is pointing in this direction. Form is emptiness, emptiness, emptiness. What is that emptiness? How do I get there? Now, one thing you can say about these forms that present, one aspect of this so-called emptiness, you might say, is its fact. It's what in my book I call emptiness, the fact that it presents. What it is has particularities. It has color, form, sound, taste, touch, feeling, emotion, particularities, constantly changing. all of the nature of incompleteness, therefore dukkha. All incomplete, never in and of themselves totally satisfactory, will make your life perfect forever and ever. Every single aspect of this form side is changing continually, never the same from one moment to the next, continually changing, because it's continually under the influence of the causes and conditions spread throughout the fabric of space-time, which is continually interacting. It's called dependent origination. And it has no self nature. What does that mean? It does not stand apart, independent of this fabric of space-time. It is one with this fabric of space-time. It's simply a particular point in a particular point in time in the entire unitary fabric of space-time. But it is. It is there. What does that mean? It is. It's not just that something is out there that's doing its thing and there's nothing aware of it. It's that it is. Now what does this mean, it is? It is. In my zazen, I become aware, mindful of some aspect of this entire fabric of space-time. It may be a particular thing that I pick up in my practice, what my teacher taught me to follow my breath, or work on a particular thought sound like mu, or watch the actual momentary changing in this center of the fabric as it appears, which is called shikantaza, holding the mind floating, almost like a cloud floating through the sky, changing every moment, but not outside me, not outside me. And I begin to notice that it is. What does that mean? It is. What that means is that it is in my center. Its amness is my center. Only I know it. Not one iota, remember now this dream, not one iota is outside me. The sixth patriarch said that. It does not exist. It does not stand outside. Anything that I become aware of, any sound, is my sound. Only I can hear my sound. Only I can hear it. Someone else might hear some sound, but they're not hearing this sound, this actual sound, not the idea of sound, this actual sound, this actual smell, the way I smell it, the way my nose works, the way my thinking elaborates. Every single moment my experience is unitary to me. Therefore, it is in my very center, my very center. It cannot be outside my center. If it is outside my center, I don't know it. Therefore, it is not. It is not. Is means I know it. So remember what God said to Moses on Mount Sinai. Moses said, "What is your name? What is the name? What is the essence of this truth?" Okay, that's how I understand this powerful, powerful line in the Bible. What is the essence of this truth? The essence of this truth is I am that I am. I am. So this amness in my center becomes I amness. My amness. I amness. I am. I am. Everything that appears is I am. It's in my deepest center. It is in my center. It being in my center, unique to me, only known by me, is I amness. Not you amness, it's I amness. I amness. I am is what I call knowing. Before I thought it was outside. So I thought I knew it. I thought I heard it. I thought I smelled it. I thought I felt it. I thought I thought it. It was out there. I was in here. And some event occurred, hearing, tasting, thinking. But this is knowing. Knowing is I am. It is known. To be known, meaning to appear in my center, to be in my center, is what knowing is. This is one unitary thing. Therefore, it is the nature of my center, my mind, my mind. Where is there anything objective there? If there's nothing objective there, how can I say it exists? This is the deep meaning of this form is emptiness. Emptiness. Empty of objective existence standing outside. There's no stuff outside there. Permanent, existing, self-separated stuff. This is the essence here. The essence. Let me describe or read to you a description by a great Tang Dynasty Zen master. He was alive around maybe 50 years after this Heart Sutra was found, was written on a palm leaf that was found in this temple. And this is a great Zen master, Wang Po. And he's talking here about this emptiness, which also is known as Buddha nature. So I'll just read you this line from the record of Wang Po, great Tang Dynasty Chinese Zen master. He wrote, "Our original Buddha nature is, in highest truth, devoid of any atom of objectivity." Isn't this exactly what we've been exploring? Our original Buddha nature is, in highest truth, devoid of any atom of objectivity. It is void, omnipresent, silent, pure. It is glorious and mysterious, peaceful joy. And that is all. Enter deeply into it by awakening to it yourself. This is the critical thing. Yourself. No one else can do that because there is only your center. You have to go to your center. That is the center of the universe. This is where you find this reality. That which is before you is it in all its fullness, utterly complete. There is not beside. Remember the Heart Sutra. Form is emptiness. He says here, that which is before you, tables, chairs, incense smell, sitting cushions, people, sounds, that which is before you is it in all its fullness, utterly complete. There is not beside. So there's nothing outside this reality, this emptiness. There's nothing standing outside, as the sixth picture said. Not a single thing from the very beginning of time has ever existed, stood outside this. Even if you go through all the stages of a bodhisattva's progress towards Buddhahood, one by one, when at last in a single flash you attain to full realization, you will only be realizing the Buddha nature which has been with you all the time. And by all the foregoing stages, you will have added to it nothing at all. You will come to look upon these eons of work and achievement as no better than unreal actions performed in a dream. That is why the Tathagata, which is one of the appellations of the Buddha, Tathagata literally means one who has gone thus, one who has gone thus. That is why the Tathagata said, "I truly attain nothing from complete unexcelled enlightenment." That is mentioned in the Heart Sutra, Anyutara Samyak Sambodhi, complete unexcelled enlightenment, nirvana. I reach the pinnacle that a human being can reach. I attain Buddhahood. And he said, "I truly attain nothing from complete unexcelled enlightenment. Had there been anything attained, Dipamkara Buddha," which is one of the primordial Buddhas, "would not have made the prophecy concerning me." So the Dipamkara Buddha predicted that the Buddha, when the Buddha, many lifetimes before he became Shakyamuni Buddha, would come to full awakening and become the Buddha of this era. He said, "Had I attained anything, Dipamkara Buddha would never have made that prediction." Why? If you attain something, it means you didn't have it originally. It wasn't intrinsic to you. If it's not intrinsic to you and you attain it, you will lose it. It is temporary. It is of the nature of form. It's impermanent. It's dukkhic. It has no self-nature. It's part of an ever-changing fabric. But this is not attainable. This is your original being. This is the original center of the universe, the original substance of the universe. This is what we're talking about. He also said, this Dharma is absolutely without distinction, neither high nor low, and its name is Bodhi. It is pure mind, with a capital M, which is the source of everything, and which, whether appearing as sentient beings or as Buddhas, as rivers and mountains of the world which has form, as that which is formless or as penetrating the whole universe, is absolutely without distinctions, there being no such entities as selfness and otherness. It is just this one substance. Substance. This is what the Heart Sutra is speaking of. Now, when we ask, what is this substance? Here's this strange flip side. The Heart Sutra doesn't stop at form is emptiness. The very next line is emptiness is form. Emptiness is form. In this world of form, don't look for mind apart from form. Don't look for something pure and stay there. In other words, don't get hooked on nirvana. Don't go to this empty place, the light of the mind shining in on itself, which we do in our deep zazen practice, coming to this place of no form, color, sound, smell, taste, touch, this single, immovable, I am. Don't get hung up, don't get addicted to that place, because every single thing is an emanation of this. Everything is this. It's shot through with it. As I read before in these oxhorting pictures, the source is inherently present. It's like the binder and paint. It's like the salt and water. It is penetrating through everything. It's embedded. So hearing, what we call hearing, is embedded in sound. There's no need for a hearer. There's no need for an entity standing apart. This is the flip side of this form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Emptiness is form. So, we have reached the end of our night, and we'll have the four vows.